Welcome, friends, and thank you, Bruce Coburn, as always, with Actions Speak Louder. This guitar man is DJ Shadow, followed by Ashley McIsaac. What do I have for you today? I have a telephone interview with Wayne Pronte of War Criminals Out. And Wayne was wearing that hat this week. He was in Toronto this last week at a gathering to unwelcome Bush and Clinton to Canada. That was in Toronto. Many of you are familiar with Wayne Pronte of Fraser Valley 911 Truth, a supporter of this show and a frequent guest. So that'll be nice to check in with Wayne tonight. And that's going to be coming up, maybe 25 minutes or so.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
In the meantime, what else do we have for tonight's show? I'm going to read an article by Michael Moore, the filmmaker documentarian. This is called Goodbye GM. Of course, his landmark documentary film of 1989, Roger and Me, in which he took on GM. That movie was very important in the history of documentaries. At the time, it was the largest grossing film, documentary, I should say, and he's since broken that a couple times. Interesting stuff. You know, and the other thing about Michael Moore, well, the TV is not too kind to him because he's saying a lot of painful truths that the corporations don't want you to know about. And a good example of that is my father absolutely despised Michael Moore. He was a pinky, junky, commie faggot and everything else nasty. And you know why? Because Bill O'Reilly told him that that's what Michael Moore was about. Yeah. However, over the last couple of years, I've been indoctrinating Dad with my own sense of propaganda. And, well, he's watched probably all the Michael Moore films now, and guess what? He's a fan. Yes, he found out that he's speaking for, well, not the top 1 and 2%, but the rest of us. And I know Michael Moore has taken a lot of flack for his rather weak film, Fahrenheit 9/11. There was a couple interesting things, and that's a little bit of truth-telling, but what the movie's strength was is showing how the American military complex is going into the inner cities and pulling these young, usually colored people off the streets where they have no future other than, well, death, crime, drugs, and prison. And, well, let's put him in the military instead. And so well done, Michael Moore, on that aspect, bang on true. So I'm going to read you that article that was published June 1st, 2009, at his home website, which is, I think it's michaelmoore.com, I believe. So that's going to be one piece. And I've got a bunch of audio clips as well. A couple of weeks back, I played Terrence McKenna, and that was a pretty popular clip. And I'm going to have another one of Terrence. This time, he's live on stage with a band. A didgeridoo is part of it. And this, well, what would you call it? I guess a spoken word presentation with music and images in the background. They're calling it Alien Dream Time, and I'm going to play the first 6 minutes of that. Pretty interesting stuff. Okay, something else. This comes to us from Rachel Maddow of MSNBC. And, well, we got a problem here. That savior, President Obama, well, he's been contradicting himself. And what this is pertaining to is prolonged detention. And what I mean by that is, in the secret prisons and the not-so-secret Guantanamo Bay, these people do not have charges placed against them in most every case. And, well, you know, the Bush administration was famous for, well, acting unlawfully. And what we're learning is that Savior Obama is going to make that illegal action legal. Yes, indeed. So, Obama, you creep. What a nasty fellow you are. And people are starting to see through you. And well done, Rachel Maddow, on corporate television, MSNBC. That's the same place that we get Keith Olbermann, or Keith Dolbermann, as Splitting the Sky would call him. So fantastic. That's, they spent 7.5 minutes on that clip. Rachel, well done to you. Okay, let's move. This is another piece, and this is Fox TV. And last week I played two audio clips that came from the TV, and I've got two more. So what's going on? All of a sudden we're getting a lot of, more honest interpretation of world events. And this comes to us from Fox TV out of Fresno, California, and it's Richard Gage. Yes, the founding member and chief spokesperson for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. A former guest on this show as well. And Fox gave him 7 minutes without condescending, you know, with good questions and a good introduction. So well done to Fox TV in Fresno. I never thought I'd say that, that's for sure. Okay, let's carry on. Another audio clip. Luke Rodowski, the founder of We Are Change. And this is another TV segment, but it's a Russian TV channel called RT. And that is a fine interview, and Luke goes into what We Are Change is about. And it's, well, basically being the media, since in most cases, the media is not doing their job, are they? And just to back that up, let's move on to the next audio clip I have. Former President JFK with his message to the media. And that was a speech he gave at the press club in Washington, D.C., I believe. What can I tell you about that? Well, this is the speech where he basically says that there is a secret government that that wants to remain secret and, you know, to pull all the dials and maneuvers of, you know, what America does on the world stage. And, of course, we know that JFK was assassinated, and it's more than likely because, well, he was acting on behalf of you and I, wasn't he? So that is a lot of what we're going to get to today. Let me see. Okay, well, I think that that is about it. Let us move on to the weather update. Fantastic. So, of course, you are listening to the Unbought and Unbossed show. Right now, we're going to put on the Terrence McKenna piece. Then I'm going to read you the Michael Moore critique on GM going down the drain. And he's got some fantastic ideas. And I don't think that Obama and the bankruptcy courts are going to listen to any of these, but he's got some good ideas. And that'll be followed with our telephone interview with Wayne Pronte of Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth and War Criminals Out. So there we are, friends. This is, of course, CHLY 101.7 FM from sunny, smoking hot downtown Nanaimo. All right. This is Alien Dreamtime, Terrence McKenna.
History is ending. the dominator culture has led the human species into a blind alley. And as the inevitable chaostrophe approaches, people look for metaphors and answers. Every time a culture gets into trouble, it casts itself back into the past, looking for the last sane moment it ever knew. And the last sane moment we ever knew was on the plains of Africa 15,000 years ago, rocked in the cradle of the great horned mushroom goddess before history, before standing armies, before slavery and property, before warfare and phonetic alphabets and monotheism, before, and this is where the future is taking us, because the secret faith of the 20th century is not modernism. The secret faith of the 20th century is nostalgia for the archaic, nostalgia for the Paleolithic, and that gives us body piercing, abstract expressionism, surrealism, jazz, rock and roll, and catastrophe theory. The 20th century mind is nostalgic for the paradise that once existed on the mushroom-dotted plains of Africa, where the plant-human symbiosis occurred that pulled us out of the animal body and into the tool-using, culture-making, imagination-exploring creature that we are. And why does this matter? It matters because it shows that the way out is back, and that the future is a forward escape into the past. This is what the psychedelic experience means. It's a doorway out of history and into the wiring under the board in eternity. And I tell you this because if the community understands what it is that holds it together, the community will be better able to streamline itself for flight into hyperspace. Because what we need is a new myth. What we need is a new true story that tells us where we're going.
Oh, where are we going? We need some new myth, perhaps. We need something, don't we? Well, Michael Moore's got some ideas, so let's see what this documentarian and author has to say. That was Mom. Mom is visiting for the weekend, and so I didn't mention that I've got someone in studio with me, and I do. Mom is here supporting me, and thanks, Mom. Okay, so this is called Goodbye GM by Michael Moore, dated June 1st, 2009. I write this on the morning of the end of the once mighty General Motors. By high noon, the President of the U.S. will have made it official. General Motors, as we know it, has been totaled. As I sit here in GM's birthplace, Flint, Michigan, I'm surrounded by friends and family who are filled with anxiety about what will happen to them and to their town. 40% of the homes and businesses in the city have been abandoned. Imagine what it would be like if you lived in a city where almost every other house is empty. What would be your state of mind? It is with sad irony that the company which invented, quote, planned obsolescence, the decision to build cars that would fall apart after a few years, so the customer would have to buy a new one. Well, they have now made itself obsolete. It refused to build automobiles that the public wanted. Cars that got great gas mileage, were as safe as could be, and were exceedingly comfortable to drive. Oh, and that wouldn't start falling apart after 2 years. GM stubbornly fought environmental and safety regulations. Its executives arrogantly ignored the inferior Japanese and German cars, cars which would become the gold standard for automobile buyers. And it was hell-bent on punishing its unionized workforce, lopping off thousands of workers for no good reason other than to improve the short-term bottom line of the corporation. Beginning in the 1980s, when GM was posting record profits, it moved countless jobs to Mexico and elsewhere, thus destroying the lives of tens of thousands of hard-working Americans. The glaring stupidity of this policy was that, when they eliminated the income of so many middle-class families, who did they think was going to be able to afford to buy their cars? Yeah. So here we are at the deathbed of General Motors. The company's body not yet cold, and I find myself filled with, dare I say it, joy. It is not the joy of revenge against a corporation that ruined my hometown and brought misery, divorce, alcoholism, homelessness, physical and mental debilitation, and drug addiction to the people I grew up with. Nor do I obviously claim any joy in knowing that 21,000 more GM workers will be told that they too are without a job. But you and I and the rest of America now own a car company. I know, who on earth wants to run a car company? Who among us wants $50 billion of our tax dollars thrown down the rat hole of still trying to save GM? Let's be clear about this. The only way to save GM is to kill GM. Saving our precious industrial infrastructure, though, is another matter and must be a top priority. If we allow the shutting down and tearing down of our auto plants, we will sorely wish we still had them when we realize that those factories could have built the alternative energy systems we now desperately need. And when we realize that the best way to transport ourselves is on light rail and bullet trains and cleaner buses, how will we do this if we've allowed our industrial capacity and its skilled workforce to disappear? Carrying on here with Michael Moore, of course, discussing the death of GM, or, well, the transformation of GM, or I'm not too sure what's going to happen. So, thus, as GM is reorganized by the federal government and the bankruptcy court, here is the plan I am asking President Obama to implement for the good of the workers, the GM communities, and the nation as a whole. 20 years ago, when I made Roger and Me, I tried to warn people about what was ahead for General Motors. Had the power structure and punditocracy listened, maybe much of this could have been avoided. Based on my track record, I request an honest and sincere consideration of the following suggestions. Now, he's got a 9-point plan here. I've edited it down to maybe 6 or so, so let's get to this. Firstly, just as President Roosevelt did after the attack on Pearl Harbor, The president must tell the nation that we are at war, and we must immediately convert our auto factories to factories that build mass transit vehicles and alternative energy devices. Within months in Flint, in 1942, GM halted all car production and immediately used the assembly lines to build planes, tanks, and machine guns. The conversion took no time at all. Everyone pinched in. The fascists were defeated. We're kind of up against the fascists again, aren't we? Unfortunately, they're in our own government. So President Obama, now that he has taken control of GM, he needs to convert the factories to new and needed uses immediately. Good point, good point. Number two, don't put another $30 billion into the coffers of GM to build cars. Instead, use that money to keep the current workforce, and most of those who have been laid off, employed, so that they can build the new modes of 21st century transportation. Let them start the conversion work now. Thirdly, announce that we will have bullet trains crisscrossing this country in the next 5 years. Japan is celebrating the 45th anniversary of its first bullet train this year. Now they have dozens of them. Their average speed is 165 miles per hour. The average time a train is late, under 30 seconds. They have had these high-speed trains for nearly five decades, and we don't have one. The fact that the technology already exists for us to go from New York to L.A. in 17 hours by train, that we haven't used it, is criminal. Let's hire the unemployed to build the new high-speed lines all over the country. This can be done, and done now. I like that one. Let's move on. Number four, initiate a program to put light rail mass transit lines in all our large and medium-sized cities. Build those trains in the GM factories, and hire local people everywhere to install and run this system. Number five, for people in rural areas not serviced by the train lines, have the GM plants produce energy-efficient, clean buses. That's a short one. Moving on. Number six, for the time being, have some factories build hybrid or all electric cars and batteries. It will take a few years for people to get used to the new ways to transport themselves. So if we're going to have automobiles, let's have kinder, gentler ones. We can be building these next month. Do not believe anyone who tells you it will take years to retool the factories. That simply is not true. Number seven, transform some of the empty GM factories to facilities to build windmills, solar panels, and other means of alternate forms of energy. We need tens of millions of solar panels right now, and there is an eager and skilled workforce who can build them. Boy, I love that idea. You know, do what we can to end this oil dependence. Yeah. Okay, let's move on here. Oh, we're just about finished here. So I guess these are the concluding comments by Michael Moore's latest commentary, editorial, I should say. He says, 100 years ago this year, the founders of General Motors convinced the world to give up their horses and saddles and buggy whips to try a new form of transportation. Now it is time for us to say goodbye to the internal combustion engine. It seemed to serve us well for so long. We enjoyed the car hops at the A&W. We made out in the front and the back seat. We watched movies on large outdoor screens, went to the races at NASCAR tracks across the country, and saw the Pacific Ocean for the first time through the window down Highway 1. And now it's over. It's a new day and a new century. The president and the union auto workers must seize this moment and create a big batch of lemonade from this very sour and sad lemon. Yesterday, the last surviving person from the Titanic disaster passed away. She escaped certain death that night and went on to live another 97 years. So, can we survive our own Titanic in all the Flint, Michigans of this country? 60% of GM is ours. I think we can do better. Absolutely, that's, I appreciate that one, Michael Moore. Well done to you, and best of luck with all that you do. So there we are. What the heck's going to happen with the automotive industry? It seems like the wages are going to come down quite a bit. That was a clip I played last week, according to a economics professor out of New York. This is the Unbought and Unbossed show. I'm going to take us to a song, and when we come back, we're going to have Wayne Pronte of Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth, and he was recently in Toronto unwelcoming more war criminals to Canada, and he was wearing his warcriminalsout.com hat. So there we are. That's where we're going to go. Anything else I got to say? I don't think so. So let's get this on, and I'll be back shortly. Be well out there. Hey.
Too loud.
Oh, too loud. Well, turn it down, Mama. Follow the little button here and turn down the little switch next to your thing. There you go. Well, hold on, folks. I got a little technical difficulty here.
Okay, is that you right there? Is that better?
Is that better, Mom? Okay, that's a bit better. Okay, as promised, on the other phone, we've got Wayne Pronte of Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth. And, of course, this week he was wearing the hat of his warcriminalsout.com. Wayne, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Raymond. Good evening, Truth fans from coast to coast, and good evening to your mom.
Yeah. Mom's smiling.
You've done a nice job there with Raymond. He's a good boy.
There you go. Right on. A little bit nervous. I called your number just a minute ago, and no one was home.
Yeah, I've been having some problems with the old telephone lately, and today was no exception.
Yeah.
And occasionally, I was already wondering whether or not when you called, if I was going to get a clear line or not, because I'm a lot of people are reporting about echo in the old line there.
Oh, okay.
And which indicates something is going on. So.
Well, we sound really clear on my end, so that's
great.
A good thing.
Yeah, this is an alternative phone number. So.
Okay. Well, I won't give it out then, will I?
No.
So I've introduced you as you having been in Toronto this last week. Now, that's not a story I've covered too much the last, 2 weeks. So can you give us a background to
Sure. What
went down, and then we'll carry on from there?
Yeah.
Thanks, Wayne.
Well, I think as most of your listeners will by now be aware that we had George W. Bush here in Calgary in March. And I kind of got drafted into this thing at that point in time. I mean, I've been primarily 9/11 Truth activist and advocate for several years, and I was approached in February by Professor Tony Hall in Splitting the Sky to help organize a movement around the war criminals issue because of the fact that Bush was coming.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Bush did come here. Splitting the Sky was there, as well as Tony Hall. Splitting the Sky attempted an arrest on Bush and so on and so forth. Little did we know, however, I mean, I thought I was going to be back doing my usual thing. Little did we know, not even a month later, we had Condoleezza Rice in Calgary.
That's right.
Speaking at the University of Calgary there for $150,000, another credibly accused war criminal. And then we found out...
Let me bump in just one sec.
Sure.
I've had Nathan Molden. He's been kind of my little correspondent out of Calgary.
Right.
For the last couple of months for these things. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that that's the way Nathan is ending up on the show, but son of a gun. So I've had someone... that's, you know, been there and, documenting what's going on.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah, he's done a great job.
Yeah. So, okay, let's carry on then.
Yeah, so anyways, little did we know. I'm not on George Bush's emailing list, so we don't get the notice 6 months in advance that he's coming here.
Yeah.
We tend to find these things out at the last moment through other activists, as was the case again with the Toronto demonstration that Bush was coming back, which surprised the heck out of us, and what surprised us even more was that he was coming back with none other than Bill Clinton.
Well, I had some conversations with people, and they were saying, no, it's Bush Sr. And so it was the junior.
It was George W.
Okay, W. Yeah. Yeah.
It was junior.
There was a couple other people speaking at this. What was it? Was it a forum? What exactly?
Yeah, it was. Well, they were at a convention center, and I'm not sure the exact theme. I guess they were just, you know, discussing current issues and policies and so on and so forth.
And patting each other on the back.
And, sure. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and telling stupid jokes. Which George is quite good at, apparently.
Yeah.
And a lot of people pay him a lot of money to go see him tell jokes, or at least see him tell jokes. So, but at any rate, so we found out about this through some other activists and so on. It was a group in Toronto called the Toronto Coalition to Stop the War. They were the group that were the primary organizers there. You know, we have, we have contacts in Toronto. We had a few people who were attending those meetings and who were advocating that they also address the 9/11 issue. That drew basically no response, or basically they brushed over it and moved on and then claimed to have dealt with it.
Hmm.
And so that was rather disconcerting. And then one of our locals there also suggested that they bring in Splitting the Sky to give a speech there.
Okay.
Being how this was again the war criminals issue, which is what they claim to have been protesting. And he was the one man in Canada who had actually attempted to do what the police and our government has failed to do, and that is to uphold the law concerning war criminals and to arrest George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
They nixed that idea. They did not really want to do that. Again, sort of skirted around it and moved on and pretended to have dealt with it. So we've been in communication with one another all the time, and it was suggested that we decided we'll go out there on our own, and if we're not welcome, we'll do our own thing.
Okay.
And which we ended up having to do, unfortunately. One thing we were also concerned about was the fact that, as I said, did not want to deal with the 9/11 truth issue. Now, we know quite a few 9/11 truthers in Toronto, and so we wanted to make sure that we got a good showing of 9/11 truth activists there.
Okay.
And we did that. There was quite a good showing. We arrived late Tuesday night in Toronto. And the next day I got up, we went to an associate's place, and I was able to get on the internet briefly there and put out the word that I was trying to organize a meeting for that night, and looked around, found a place where we could do that relatively cheaply and get the place right away. And so we put on this meeting, invited as many people as we could, spread the word through Richard Harris from We Are Change in Toronto, got the word out as well as a few other people did. But unfortunately, on such short notice, it wasn't a great turnout, but we did get about, I think there was about 10 people there.
Okay.
So, and these were people who were primarily 9/11 truth activists. We didn't get anybody else from the other peace community there.
Okay.
And so I gave a talk there, basically, talking about the issue of how 9/11 and peace, truth, and justice and the war criminals issue commingle.
Yeah, they sure do.
Yeah, and we can't and we shouldn't avoid any one of these issues. You know, it's all related to the war on terror. And I want to make the point that if we're going to have peace, real peace, lasting peace, that we're going to have to address the root causes of wars, which are historically always, almost without exception,
false flag operations.
Right. They're pretext created, which are called false flag operations.
So what was it? Is the peace movement basically stuck in the official version of reality? Is that their problem? Or
yes, apparently so. And that's what I talked about, the fact that, you know, we've got all of these people are quite convinced that they were lied to about weapons in mass destruction in Iraq, They were lied to about oil pipelines. They were lied to about torture, lied to about, you know, different lies and cover-ups and everything for the last 8 years. It's just been one big lie after another, after another, after another.
Mm-hmm. Except 9/11.
And the one thing that they don't want to look at is the one big lie that kicked it all off. You know?
That is so frustrating when, you know, you're absolutely right. It seems as if the peace community, you know, Bush lied about absolutely everything except 9/11.
Yeah.
And oh, boy, oh, boy.
It is frustrating. So, and my point is this, is that, you know, I mean, maybe to some degree, maybe we have to look in our you know, ourselves in the mirror and see maybe where we've gone wrong of this, too. That, you know, I'm not one of those persons who goes out on the street yelling 9/11 was an inside job. That is my opinion, but that's not what I want to give to people.
Okay.
I want people to look at the information and come to their own conclusions. And so I'm just out there trying to perform a public service to give them the information that they're not getting from other places,
mm-hmm.
Invite them to look at it and to make up their own minds about what that, you know, what conclusions they can come to from this evidence. And, you know, I think, you know, we've got them 7 ways to Sunday that the official story is a lie.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't have to yell it was a 9/11 was an inside job to make my point, right? And so I think we have to, and I've said this over the years too, that, you know, I think we have to be more civil in our approach,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So we may be partly to blame for that. But on the other hand, too, you know, there's just this blind refusal to look at things and our reliance on, you know, the tried and true, you know, the pundits such as Chomsky and Zinn and so on and so forth who go, oh, no, there's nothing to that. There could never be such a big conspiracy. And it's just conspiracy theories and blah, 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 you know. So, you know, the taking those people at their word rather than looking at the information for themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Hey, so, if I can butt in for a sec, I don't know if you've been following this Jonathan Kay with the National Post. Apparently he's putting together a book documenting the truth movement, and I guess a lot of it is going to be Canadian content.
Right.
And it's interesting that he is taking Chomsky's stand, and I last night saw an interesting YouTube clip of, who was it? It was Professor Hall, Professor
McQueen,
and another chap who I'm not familiar with. Do you know his name?
It escapes me at the moment.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. And Jonathan Kay was at this lecture and was asking questions afterward, and Professor Hall, who's been on the show, basically stated that, you know, you disagree, you know, the conservative mind frame disagrees with most everything Chomsky has ever said,
yeah.
But yet the one thing he says, you're jumping all over like you're a Chomskyite.
Right.
And, you know, Tony really put him in his place there.
Yeah, there was a couple of meetings recently in the Toronto area, the Metro Toronto areas and some of the surrounding towns. One was in Waterton, I think that's the one you're referring to.
Okay.
And there was another one, let's see, I forgot the name of the town now. But anyways, so there's been a few recent town hall meetings, and yes, Tony's been at those. He's currently staying in Toronto.
Okay.
And so he's been getting around, and yeah, he's been really just handing Jonathan Kay his butt in public.
Yeah.
And it looks good on him.
Mm.
Of course, now if you're a listener and not familiar, I think Jonathan Kay writes for the National Post. And he wrote an article, a scathing article, about 9/11 truthers last fall during the election, the federal election.
Yeah.
And so a lot of truthers from across Canada sort of ganged up on him and writing responses to his article. And he kind of took it upon himself, saying, well, then I'm going to have to investigate this further. So apparently that's what he's doing, and plans to write a book on the issue.
Yeah, I'm curious how he's going to tackle that, whether it's going to be another popular mechanics, you know, debunking techniques, or is he going to focus on the personalities and our tactics of, you know, whether it's civil informationing or the more aggressive style. I'm looking forward to reading it, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Okay. No, I haven't been following it that closely. I'm just too busy doing other stuff. But it has been somewhat interesting from the clips that I have seen. And like I said, Tony's done a great job.
Mm-hmm.
So. And Tony did address these issues, too, during the demonstration. Now, we were in the build-up for that thing. Well, first off, getting back to that meeting, I spoke for about 10 minutes or so there. and that will be actually it's already uploaded on archive.org. You can watch that there.
Okay, very
and
nice.
There's another Tony Hall talked after me. It was about for about 40 minutes. I presented a new paper.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, it was quite good. Specifically about the Bush Clinton deal.
Okay.
And
well, what about splitting the sky? Was he in Toronto?
He was in Toronto with us, and he was there that night. But
okay.
Yeah, we had a late start, and we decided to just hang on, and just see if more people would show up, and so we were running low on time. But he didn't talk that night.
Okay.
Anyways, but we had he had arranged for that. No, that meeting was Wednesday night. For Thursday night, he had he has a number of Native friends in that area, and they arranged for him to speak at the Native Friendship Center in Toronto. And then we found out that he had spoken there many times in the past. You know, 15, 20 years ago, and he said some of the best political talks ever, you know, were presented there.
Okay.
And now we find out that they no longer want anything political said in there.
Oh.
Ooh, yeah.
Huh.
So with a bit of arm twisting, they managed to get 15 minutes for him. There was a family sort of event on kind of a powwow thing going on there with the Native drums and so on, and traditional foods and I'm forgetting the exact name of it, but anyways, he did get his 15 minutes there. And he says, well, like it or not, folks, I'm going to be talking some politics here.
Yeah.
And he gave his because he felt it was his duty to do this. And he called it the warning to the Confederation, and that's referring to the Six Nations Confederacy.
Okay.
And that it was prophesied in the, maybe 1,000 years ago.
Interesting.
By the Tigonawida, who was the man who came up with the constitution that they live under, which would later was adopted by the United States of America.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. And but he said that there would come a time when the constitution and the great law of the peace would be attacked, would come under attack, and that it would be the time for the people to stand up to this tyranny. And so that's the speech he delivered, the warning to the Confederation, and that's also now up on archive.org, and it's just about it's only a 15-minute clip. I'm going to be making cutting that in half and making it two smaller clips and putting it on YouTube as well.
Okay, so how do we find these on archive? What's the handle you're using?
Yeah, well, it's published by WarCriminals Out, I should say.
Okay, so if we go to archive.org and punch in War Criminals Out.
Use the search engine and then type in media files or videos, movies, right? Open source movies.
Yeah.
You should find those.
Very nice. I'm going to butt in again. That's where listeners can listen to previous shows of the Unbought and Unbossed show. They are archived at archive.org, and you can punch in my name, Raymond Geisler, or Unbought and Unbossed. So there we are. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just in the process of uploading a couple of them, a couple other ones to YouTube right now. One has just gone up, I see, just finished uploading, and that is to do with the fact that, as I said, while we were there, we were not welcomed the way we thought we should be at that event. At some point during, I think it was around 5 o'clock, the event went from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock on Friday. Now, they were expecting thousands of people. As they estimated 10 to 15,000. This is what was being discussed on the public radio waves there.
Okay.
So they were bringing in police and everything from everywhere. Media was everywhere. In fact, at the beginning stage, there was far more media there than people. And as it turned out, it looked like there might have been maybe 400 people, perhaps generously 500.
Ouch.
Yeah. We were quite disappointed by that.
I mean, if Calgary can pull that number together on short notice, you would think Toronto, with the population.
Yeah, Calgary did even better than that, and it's a very conservative town, so we were quite disappointed by that. There was a number of events going on, like in Mariners, or in Seattle, Toronto Blue Jays baseball game and this and that. And,
right.
And it was the one sunny day that we'd had. I mean, it rained the whole time we were there. Fortunately, we lucked out with the weather on Friday. So I don't know what people were up to, what they thought was more important. We were also kind of disappointed with the mood of the event, too, because the coalition there in Toronto wanted to promote it as basically a happy event and a fun thing and a picnic type of, you know, family sort of whatever, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, and given the seriousness of the allegations against against Bush and as well as Clinton, you know, we didn't think this was a should be a party atmosphere.
Okay.
And but anyways, around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I went over to the stage. The lady who was basically managing the stage and being the MC, I said to I walked up to her very politely and asked her. I said, "Well, do you realize we've got splitting the sky here?" He's the man who tried to arrest Bush in Calgary. I think, do you think you could spare him 10 minutes of your time to give a talk to the crowd here? "Oh, no, that's not what we're about. We're not going there." I said, "Excuse me?
What was she about?" What?
Yeah, she didn't say. She kind of turned away and carried on doing her thing.
I hope it's not picnics.
I said, "Excuse me?" I said, the Toronto Coalition Against the War doesn't have 10 minutes time. That's not respect what was done by splitting the sky in Calgary. The only man who you're standing here yelling, arrest Bush, and one man had the guts and the integrity to do that, and you don't want to talk to him. Nope, we're not going there. That's not what we're about. So I said, okay, fine. You know, I had on Friday morning and early afternoon, one of my friends, David McIntosh, who I should also say thank you to, where I was staying, he and another fellow, Mark Savory, we got together, we made some signs for War Criminals Out. And on the way down, I said to Mark, I said, "You know what?" I said, let's find a place where we might be able to buy a bullhorn. I said, "I want to have a backup here, because we didn't come out here just to stand around and, look like we're just part of the crowd. We did bring a message, and we want to be able to say our message." And so he said, "Oh, yeah, I think I know a place." So we went there, we picked up a bullhorn along the way. And so when this lady denied us, we got into a bit of a huddle, myself and Splitting the Sky and Tony Hall and a few others. And I said, "How do we want to proceed? Do we want to just butt in, or shall we wait?" And then we decided, no, we're not going to butt in. We'll give them more respect than what they showed us.
Okay.
So we waited till 6 o'clock when they were going to knock off and when the event was basically ending across the street at the convention center. And I jumped up with the bullhorn and announced the split man who tried to arrest Bush was there and asked people to gather around and hear what he had to say. He gave a great speech there. Well, not too long, but 6 or 7 minutes. And then followed by Tony Hall, who just gave an outstanding speech. And the people were quite pleased with what we had to say there. So much to the chagrin of the people who ran the stage.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
One other interesting thing that happened there, because as I said, there were these reports on the airwaves that they were expecting a massive demonstration of 10 or 15,000 people. Splitting the Sky, now he was staying with somebody else. He decided to go on down alone ahead of us and check things out. And he got there, and there was hardly any other demonstrators there at the time. There was tons of media around and lots of cops and undercover people, security people, and so on. And he was approached by two men who were undercover and who accused him, walked up to him and accused him of wanting to break into the convention center to kill George W. Bush. Kill him.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, of course, is absolutely ludicrous.
Right.
Splitting the Sky wasn't even going to try another citizen's arrest. He's done his thing. He's got a court case coming up next year, and it's going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's already got them where he wants them, and which was precisely his point in doing that, because now he's going to have quite a good venue to make the case for war crimes.
I understand that he's got 5 days to bring in experts.
Absolutely, yes. It's going to be huge. They asked for 4 days, and the judge was seemed to be quite open to what they're talking about and granted them 5 days.
My goodness.
Yeah, so that's going to be huge because they're going to be bringing in legal experts as well as victims of the torture victims and of the murders and so on that have taken place. So it's going to be huge. It's going to be like a trial within a trial.
Do we know the date?
No, I don't know the exact date, but it's going to be in March 2010.
Okay, so March. That's close enough. All right.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so there's, you know, and that's one of the reasons why we went out as well, is that, you know, we want to publicize that. I did make a documentary about what happened in Calgary and the reasons why he did that. That's also available on archive.org, and I made a DVD about it as well, with a lot of extra footage surrounding that, what took place there. And we took those with us, we were asking for donations for DVDs. And so we did manage to raise some cash for him while we were there.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to take a quick minute to do a station ID.
Absolutely.
Listeners, you are listening to CHLY 101.7 FM from downtown Nanaimo. You can catch us online, live streaming at chly.ca. You are also listening to the Unbought and Unbossed show. I'm your host, Ray McGeisler. We are speaking with Wayne Pronte, who's currently in the Fraser Valley, and he was in Toronto last week to unwelcome Bush and Clinton. Okay, that takes care of my business. Let's carry on, Wayne.
Sure. I got there, maybe an hour or so after Splitting the Skies arrived. And so he told me about this right away. And he'd already been talking to a lot of the media because the media were standing around with nothing to do. So he got their attention right away.
Did anyone come to him? Did they recognize him from?
Yes, some did.
Okay.
But fortunately, a friend of his also showed up, a fellow by the name of John, Big John, and helped give him some security around there, too, in case they did try anything with him, because that was an obvious provocateur attempt. You know, it was an attempt to provoke him into doing something so that they would have a reason to arrest him and discredit him.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, if you're spreading a rumor that he's out to kill, you know, the former president, whoa.
Yeah, so... Yeah, so we managed to round up a few witnesses. Nobody was able to positively identify these guys as to what agency they were with, but many of the stories that we were hearing jived. So we are going to be pursuing that further in the coming weeks through his lawyers to try and determine what happened. Because, I mean, there was cameras everywhere. Yeah. CBC, CTV, City TV, you name it, everybody was there.
What was the footage like that evening or and the next day? On the TV?
There was some that evening, yeah. It wasn't too bad. The coverage wasn't too bad.
Well, being with the small showing of, the small protest, I imagine it kind of turned into a non-story.
Yeah. It was a story. They did cover it, but they did point out that, you know, while they were expecting thousands, they were saying it was only 200 or 300. I think it was more than that, but it was not a lot more. Okay. You know. So, anyways, so we've got some. Like I said, that was the one really frustrating thing while I was there was that I managed to borrow a camera off of a friend from We Are Changed in Vancouver. And Tosh, if you're listening, thanks a lot, buddy.
Mm-hmm, very cool, yeah.
And but then when I got there, I realized I didn't have the right cable to hook that thing up to my computer to download the digital video onto my laptop.
Right. So you just filled up the camera.
What's that?
You just filled up the memory, did you?
Well, we had a number of cassettes.
Good.
Yeah, I didn't take a lot of excessive stuff because there just wasn't really a whole lot going on.
Okay.
Nothing as dramatic as what was taking place in Calgary, that's
right,
for sure. So you know, we got the important stuff, what we were up to, anyways. But the person I was staying with, he also didn't have internet access, so I couldn't get on the internet while I was there. So I had a lot of downtime, and
that must have been painful.
It was, because I couldn't really keep up with what was going on, and people were sending me stuff.
Yeah, I can't imagine you 2 days without the internet.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, yes, I could have gone to, an internet cafe where you use their computers to check emails, but I needed to do more than that because I wanted to try and get some of this footage uploaded as soon as possible. You know?
Right, right.
And I wasn't able to do that. First of all, I wasn't able to download stuff from the camera. I had to, it took me a day or two to find what I needed. Running around, running myself ragged to get a cable that I needed. And because it just wasn't much around there in that area that I was staying in. So I eventually did get that, but then didn't have the internet anyway. So, yeah, it was frustrating in that regard. We did manage to get out and do a few other things while we were there. Now, as you know, Annie Michon, she was on your show, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then spoke in Vancouver Friday and a half ago, I guess.
And then Sunday in Victoria, yeah.
Right, and so I met her in Vancouver, and I said, well, we'll be meeting again in Toronto, and sure enough, she was there at the demonstration, as was, by the way, yeah, Barry Swicker was there as
oh,
well.
Oh, nice, okay.
He came out to the meeting that we put on Wednesday. He was also at the demonstration.
Very nice.
And, Annie spoke at the University of Toronto on Friday night, so we went to that, and Saturday... She was in, pardon me, was it Saturday or Sunday? It was Sunday in Kitchener. And so we drove all the way down to Kitchener to see her, and it was actually her and Barry Swicker together.
Very nice.
Yeah. So it was interesting. Met a lot of nice people, a lot of cool people. Some that I've known their names or their email addresses,
yeah.
But didn't have a face for.
Right,
you know?
Right. Nice.
And one of the people that I really met or really enjoyed meeting there was... a young lady by the name of Nikki, and I guess she's probably late 20s or early 30s, and she lives in the Toronto area, and she was formerly a nursing student and was in New York City at the time of 9/11.
Okay.
Yeah, and she actually went there and helped out with the first responders. Was a first responder. She worked one of the triage stations there.
Wow.
Yeah, and she unfortunately is very ill from the toxic waste that was blowing around after the buildings came down.
Yeah.
And so she has been very ill over the years and deteriorating health.
Mm.
She's got cancer. She's had a number of heart attacks. She's very toxic, low energy levels and so on. And but she's just a wonderful young lady. And... her story was rather touching to hear. And, the reason why, one of the reasons why we're out there doing what we're doing for 9/11 Truth, is that, it didn't end on 9/11. There's still a lot of people who are still sick and still dying even now from what happened then. And they want answers and deserve answers, and they deserve justice, for what happened, and they want to know why it happened, they want to know how it happened, and they want help, that's another reason why we're advocating 9/11 Truth.
Yeah, good point.
So I'm hoping I can hook her up with you in the not too distant future.
Okay, good. And you said Nikki was her name.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, I wish you the best, Nikki, and thanks for speaking out, and I'd love to have her on the show. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then when was it? I guess it was Saturday night. It was when Annie was speaking in Toronto. I'm sorry, it was Saturday night. Friday night, yeah, we got together with some of the other truthers at an apartment right downtown, just below the CN Tower, in fact. we had a good time, drank some beers and chilled out and had some fun. But we also, they showed me around the place. The guy who lives here, he might be somebody you want to get on the show one day, too. I'm just having a blank on his name at the moment. But he lives in an apartment block called The Matrix.
Oh, huh.
And it's, like, right across from the stadium there.
Huh.
And he showed me around, and there's all this Masonic stuff going on around there. It's just incredible.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
With, of course, the CN Tower being the central pivotal point of that. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we have any other bad guys, any of the military complex coming to Canada again shortly?
Yeah. Now, the only one that I have heard of is that Dick Cheney will be coming either late this summer or sometime in the fall to British Columbia.
Huh.
And my understanding, you know, I've heard two different stories. One says that he's going on a hunting trip. Others say he's going on a fishing trip. So one or the other, take your pick.
Right.
And we're not sure yet exactly where. At least I don't have that information.
I wonder if he's going to go play with Jimmy Patterson. He takes...
Well, that's a distinct possibility.
Yeah, you bet it is.
Yeah, those types do seem to flock together and pat each other in the back, and it doesn't matter what you have to do to make money, as long as you make money, you know. And
yeah.
So
okay, well, it sounds like we're just about running down, or is there something?
Well, I do want to say, like I said, I want to say thank you for sure to David McIntosh for putting me up and helping me out with some money. I want to say thank you very much to John Duddy, who also made it possible for me to go there, to Tony Hall and Splitting the Sky, and everybody else who was involved. We did a great job. We didn't have a lot of time. We put a lot of effort into it, and we did as best we could. And I think when you see some of the video, I think you'll find it good and interesting, I'm sure. And I will forward you some links to those as well, so you don't have to spend so much time searching for them.
Thank you.
So you can put those on your blog. Now, the last thing I would say is this. There has been some criticism out there lately of some of us, because we are, at least myself, speaking for myself, you know, as I said, I have been primarily 9/11 truth activist up to this point, and I do advocate civil information.
Mm-hmm.
And I got involved with this because when my constitution, my country, my constitution and the rule of law is under attack, then I don't have a choice, but I have to act. I have to get involved. And 9/11 truth is still very important to me. I think that these two issues do fit together, and do fit together with the peace movement as well.
Okay.
And I think we do have to rub shoulders with those people more often, which we tried to do. So that was a good reason to be down there wearing a 9/11 truth shirt, which we did. I don't personally foresee in the near future a time when we are going to get anybody in government advocating an investigation of 9/11 truth. I will continue to do it as time allows and to the best of my ability. But when we have, this is what I call a red alert. This is an emergency that of the highest proportions as far as I'm concerned, because when we have a government that is refusing to enforce the rule of law, laws that they have created, laws that they have signed on to, international laws, and are just flaunting the law, then we have tyranny, then we have anarchy. There's nothing predictable anymore. And they're picking and choosing when to enforce the law, such as with Mr. Galloway.
Yeah.
So, we have to speak out about those issues. At least I feel I do. So,
you wrote a short editorial a couple months back about, it was actually, it was a third letter to a third party, your local MP, saying that, I might have to run for office myself,
right,
to get some of this information out. And that is something that I've been thinking about. And I haven't done my homework yet to find out exactly what it takes to run as an independent.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any information on that?
I don't. At this point, I don't. But right. I imagine it wouldn't be much different from, if I was to be a candidate for CAP. So, and I did meet a number of CAP party people back there, too. So,
okay.
But we can talk about that another time. Anyways, at this point in time, I just don't feel like I this is the most important issue for me right now. I don't feel I've got a lot of choice, and I think we do have to get more people involved on this and really put it out there, because of the fact that it's not really debatable. There is so much evidence against these people, and the average person on the street is right with us when we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the public support for it is there. It's just a matter of whether or not people want to get involved and do something about it and demand that something be done about it. Okay. And so, you know, we're going to continue on these issues. I'm hoping that we're going to have a lull in the action now so I can finally, you know, get the, once I get these videos done and so on, that I can get back to my 9/11 stuff, which has been lacking since, I guess, March was probably the last time we were out. And I really do want to do something this year on Canada Day for 9/11 Truth as well. Yeah, I just want to put that out there and just clarify where I stand on that.
Okay.
The last thing I was going to mention was, oh, yes, this is excellent news. Now, I think you're aware that we did put out a petition regarding the war criminals. We came up with that when Bush came to Calgary, or
right.
A few weeks before Bush came to Calgary.
Yeah, yeah.
We posted it online, and we also made a version that people could download and they could collect signatures. So, and we did a lot of that. I handed in quite a few of them to my local MP. Of course, he did nothing with it, but I made copies of those. Our friends at We Are Change Vancouver have also been active with those petitions and have collected quite a few in Vancouver. Well, we did amend the petition so that it no longer reads just George W. Bush. It reads Bush and, you know, Rumsfeld, Cheney, Rice et al., and all the neocons, basically.
Yeah, the whole regime. Yeah.
Right. So, so we amended that. And a few things. Gail Davidson also tweets it for us somewhat. And we did get quite a number of signatures. And Travis from We Are Change approached NDP MP Libby Davies of East Vancouver with the petition, asking her if she would read it in the House of Parliament. And so we were corresponding on back and forth on that, Travis and I. And I suggested to Travis, I said, well, listen, while you have her ear, I've got about six questions I would like to be asked in the House of Commons regarding the issue of the war criminals, in particular George W. Bush and what happened in Calgary.
Okay.
And so I passed those questions on to him, and he forwarded them to Libby Davies, and we got a response back from her office that they are on the book and will be read. She's tweaked them somewhat to their own particular format there.
Okay.
But we can look forward to those being read out, that the government being questioned about these issues in the House of Parliament in the very near future.
Very nice. Well, Libby Davies also, on behalf of Vancouver 9/11 Truth, read a short piece in Parliament concerning 9/11.
Mm-hmm, right.
So, wow.
Right. Yeah.
Good for her.
Now, and of course, you know, she did put a disclaimer on that she wasn't on her own behalf, but on behalf of people in her riding.
That's right.
Right. So now, this, she does seem to be quite interested in this particular issue.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that, and I think that's big news. And hopefully
that might be something the NDP will jump on.
I'm hoping that they will. I don't place a lot of,
those guys. But likewise, but it's possible.
It's possible, and this is where it needs to be discussed, is in the House of Parliament, which it hasn't up until now, and this is why I'm, a number of us are very disappointed with the NDP, with the ones who we feel should be talking about it have been totally silent on it, as have all the other opposition parties.
Yeah.
So this is progress that we've been able to make. And, we just need more people to get involved, to do what they can, whether it's, calling your MP, writing your MP, grabbing, some of our signs that we've got on our website, warcriminalsout.com. You can print them out, paste them onto some sandwich board or something like that, and go out and have a protest with a couple of people. And it's one of the things I talked about, again, in Toronto, and my little talk that I gave is that, we don't need 10,000 people at a rally.
Yeah.
People are hoping that we'll have 10,000 people. Well, we don't need that. What we need is 10,000 people across Canada who care and who will go in their own community.
Yeah, one-on-one, yeah.
One-on-one, or maybe a group of two or three,
yeah.
And just be visible and be voicing your opinions and telling people that you care about these issues,
yeah.
Whether that be 9/11, whether that be the war criminals issue, whether that be the issue of vaccines or chemtrails or, whatever your particular bailiwick happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's civil information and just being there as a service to the public. And I really stress that, as opposed to being a protester, which a lot of people find is a nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we can be effective. We just have to make decisions to do it. And this is the time is now, as far as I'm concerned. things are only going to get worse if we don't take action.
Yeah,
we're not going to get any better.
Yeah, you're right about that. Wayne, I am going to cut you off there, buddy.
Thank you very much.
thank you for going to Toronto and coming back here with an update, and you know, likewise posting the stuff at. Now, can they also? Do you have links posted at warcriminalsout.com?
I've managed to update the site somewhat last night. There's a couple of new articles up there that they can read. Yep.
And, okay, good, good. And what about Tony Hall's most recent paper? Do you have a copy of that?
I have a copy of that, and if it's not up there already, it will be shortly.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I've got so many things going here. It's hard to remember what I've done and what I was going to do. But yeah, you'll see it there.
Okay, very nice.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
brother.
And like I said, I'll send you the links to the video.
Fantastic.
All right, Brandon. All right, thanks for having me. Appreciate
it. Right on, brother. Be well, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, there we go. Wayne Pronte of Fraser Valley, 9/11 Truth. Okay, that was a long conversation. There was a lot of topics going on there, and I'm certainly sad to hear that the Toronto populace did not come out to show their disgust of Bush. The war criminal is about the minimum. That's about the nicest thing I could say about that guy. So. But what I do have to do is get to the campus community update. But I'm going to put on a song first, and then we're going to do the campus community update. And then we'll carry on with the show. I'm not too sure how many of those audio clips we're going to get to, but hopefully a couple of them. So what we got for you right now is Tom Wilson, formerly of Junk House and Blackie and the Rodeo Kings. And so this is from his first solo album. It's called What a Bummer. Hey, I just got a phone call from Doug Brinkman of Edmonton 9/11 Truth. Hey, Doug, that's a nice surprise. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Raymond. Yeah, I just happened to have the night off, so I tuned in tonight. And,
fantastic.
It was really great to hear Wayne Pronte on the air tonight.
Yeah, yeah, a lot going down in Toronto this last week.
Yeah, I just wanted to pass on to Wayne. Don't be too disappointed with Toronto. It's like their sports teams, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and when you compare it to the Edmonton Oilers and the Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, the fans are all out here, and down there, well, Toronto, when it comes to their sports teams, you know, it's just not a really big deal anymore, and neither with their football or anything else. So it's not surprising to see that a lot of people didn't show up for that in comparison to what took place in Calgary.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also wanted to mention, too, you know, we got lots to be thankful for the work that Wayne Pronte's done back in Fraser Valley, and of course the work that we've done in the past with civil information, and we you know, we carry on with civil information here at Edmonton.
That's right.
And it works for us, and we're very pleased that we crossed each other's path, and we put that together. And
yeah, yeah.
So anyways, yeah, I just wanted to say it was very good to hear what happened down in Toronto, and I know Wayne's focus right now is on this on this issue of war criminals coming across the border, and I commend him for that, and I think, you know, it's like what Pete Seeger said, you know, we got to pick our battles, and we all got to do our part as far as what we think needs to be done in this world, and
yeah.
I applaud Wayne and the rest of them for doing what they did down in Toronto and dealing with this situation with war criminals coming across the border.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Speaking of civil informationing, your most recent Speaker's Corner is yourself giving different examples of how yourself and your co-civil informationing persons in Edmonton, how you distribute your information. And
yeah,
I've got that. Well, I won't say queued up to go. It's on my outline.
Okay.
The interview ran a little bit longer, so I'm not too sure I'm going to get to it, but hopefully the following week. Another great piece. Those of you who aren't regulars to the show, Doug Brinkman does Speaker's Corner out of Edmonton and talks to various, well, just kind of regular Joes, you and I, but the last couple of weeks you've been... how do you word it? You've been... You gave a polite reminder to keep the 9/11... in the forefront, and then the following week you gave a talk on different examples of civil information.
Yes, it's interesting, too, that you bring that up. Some of the 9/11 Speakers Corner we do during civil information, and I wanted to mention, too, to Wayne and your listeners that we too, don't have too much cooperation with the local peace activists, and we haven't had too much cooperation with the Council of Canadians. So we tend to crash their rallies. We bring our signs, and we stand off to the corner, and we do our civil information, and whether they like us there or not, we're there.
Yeah,
and,
there you go.
Recently we did the anti-war rally, and there's about maybe 30 people that showed up for that. It was a prime example of the March of the Penguins, where no one showed up except for the choir. But
yeah.
We were there doing our civil information on the background, and we handed out dozens and dozens of public newsletters on 9/11.
Yeah.
And I think some of the organizers of Echo War were a little bit mad at us, because we were handing out the literature while they were doing all the speeches and stuff at the back. But hey, you know, we're there in support of their efforts. We're against war just as much as they are, and
yep.
And we feel that if when you get to the bottom of 9/11, I think it's just going to fall like a domino's effect with war, with some of the issues we're having with.
Mm-hmm.
With war criminals coming across the border, and with
North American Union,
the loss of our rights and freedoms these days, and the North American Union, it just everything just falls like a domino effect, and which is something that I think some people in the Council of Canadians are starting to realize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, some of the issues that they're dealing with. If they were to take a little closer look at 9/11, they would realize that it would probably make their job a lot easier if they took a serious look at some of the information that's out there that's provided by architects and engineers and through 911truth.org and what have you. It's there.
Hey, speaking of Richard Gage with Architects and Engineers, it might have been you who sent this to me, but he was recently on Fox TV out of Fresno, California for 7 minutes, and it was a hell of an interview.
Oh, they let, great.
Yeah. And the funny thing I'm going to say is that the last couple of weeks I've been playing television news clips, and they're actually doing a really good job in a lot of cases all of a sudden. I don't know if you've noticed that trend as well, but...
I have noticed it, and as a matter of fact, I just posted something on 9/11 Blogger. I got front page notice that another radio station, a major radio station down in California, KGO AM 810... Sorry, 810.
Okay, where's that out of?
Also had Richard Gage on, and it was exactly the same kind of conversation, a very respectful conversation with Richard, and they were very interested in what he had to say, and that's also now posted up on 9/11 Bloggers. So, yeah, it's wonderful to see that mainstream media is starting to open up a little bit.
Interesting, you know? Yeah. Well, I wonder, now, if we want to talk about kind of the American... federal politics, Democrat versus Republican, you'll remember that when Clinton was in, a Democrat, prior to Bush, the media just attacked him left, right, and center, and then Bush came in and they just kissed his ass, and now we got a Democrat again back in, and I'm wondering if they're going to, you know, the media is going to do their job and you know, attempt to hold him to account somewhat. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with that.
Well, you know, the issue of war crime criminals coming across, I mean, I think a lot of people in the 9/11 truth movement have realized that, you know, laws have been broken, the Geneva laws have been broken, and we've known this for a long time, and even up here in Edmonton, we've been having rallies in that against torture in reference to Omar Khadr's situation, and you know, we've totally been on board. It's only recently that mainstream media is starting to open up a crack and starting to talk a little bit more about this stuff, which is wonderful to see. But where were they a couple of years ago when they were committing these crimes? And it's the same with 9/11. I mean, I'm hoping one day that we'll be able to look back upon a time when we'll say, well, what were they doing 2 years ago when all this stuff was coming out about 9/11?
Right.
And I'm hoping to see one day that just like torture, you know, the mainstream media is going to start opening up the door towards this this inescapable evidence that people like Richard Gage and Stephen E. Jones has come up with, Kevin Ryan, how can they escape that stuff? Sooner or later, they're going to have to deal with it.
Right. That reminds me of Wayne and I were speaking briefly on this Jonathan Kay, the journalist with the National Post.
Yes.
Now, you've been following that story and his promise that he's writing a book. Do you know a published date? Is he just starting the book, or is he just wrapping it up? Do you know where he's at as far as that goes?
I probably know as much as Wayne on that.
Oh, okay. All right.
I work for the same company as he does.
Right.
I work for Camp West, but as a printer.
Now, have you had correspondence with him, or...?
One or two correspondences in regards to the guest speakers that I had at the recent Edmonton Questions of 9/11.
Okay.
He wanted to interview both speakers, and I haven't heard anything since then.
Huh.
Now, so I probably know as much as what everybody else knows.
Well, maybe I should try to get him on the show.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
You know, I like to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I mean, sure, he's working for Camp West, and they haven't been giving us too many good articles lately. But, I mean, if he does his research right, and if he's honest about it, if he can look in the mirror and say, well, okay, I'm not following a corporate editorial policy here.
It's not a hit piece,
I'm following my own integrity. Then maybe he might come up with a pretty good book. Huh. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I hope that he's well into it, because I want to read it now.
Yeah, me. Well, it was great calling in.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. That was a nice surprise.
Say hi, and great to hear Wayne Perante on the air and speak about some of the experiences down in Toronto.
Yeah.
Wish I would have been there with you guys, but you know, I guess someone's got to look after things out.
That's right, yeah.
But really enjoyed having them on tonight, hearing them on your show.
Okay, my friend, and I've enjoyed the surprise call from you, so thank you.
All right,
partner.
Good night.
Be well, buddy. Okay, that's Doug Brinkman of Edmonton 9/11 Truth, and Edmonton just put on their second Edmonton Questions 9/11 event with Barry Zwicker as the keynote speaker. I had him on... couple of weeks back as an interview. That was a fantastic interview, as a matter of fact. That really got a lot of downloads at my website. And the other speaker was Bruce Sinclair with Pilots for 9/11 Truth. Bruce agreed to, I guess, a full interview. He was on this show a couple of weeks back just for a short bit, and I'd like to have him back for a full-length interview. So I've got to take care of business and start setting up some dates. I've got... Yeah. Now, I was going to get to the campus community update, so let's do that, shall we? Where did I put my outline? Oh, man, it's 9:43, and I haven't gotten to any of these audio clips. Son of a gun. But a good one is this Rachel Maddow. I'm going to play that one right now, and she is a MSNBC news person, and she's focusing on Obama contradicting himself on prolonged detention. So a lot of the people that are in these Guantanamo and the other unknown number of secret prisons throughout the world, no charges are laid, right? Well, and yet they're being detained without charges against them, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. Well, guess what Obama's going to do? He's going to rewrite the laws to make that legal. Yeah, that's kind of scary. And there's that movie, not Bourne Identity. The one with, Tom Cruise, where it's kind of he's a thought crime police guy. And Rachel Maddow makes reference to that. You know, being arrested for something we think you might do. That's getting into a lot of gray area as far as I'm concerned. So what we're going to do, we're going to hear that clip, and then I'm going to have to look at the time and decide what we're going to hear after that. So let me cue up my iPod here. Yeah, of course you are listening to CHLY 101.7 FM. This is the Unbought and Unbossed show, and Dylan asked me to, why don't I give my email address out a little bit more often so you don't have to write Dylan and he's got to forward them to me. You can...
shoot the goods straight to me. So if you want to contact me, you want to be a guest, you've got an idea for a show, what have you, you can catch me at RaymondTruthRadio@Hotmail.com. That's RaymondTruthRadio@Hotmail.com. There we go. Okay, Rachel Maddow, MSNBC, Obama contradicting himself on prolonged detention. Talk to you in a couple minutes.
But we begin tonight with a tale of two speeches, both from the same man, both from President Obama. One speech that could have been billed as a ballad to the Constitution, a proclamation of American values, a repudiation of the lawless behavior of the last presidential administration, and another speech announcing a radical new claim of presidential power that is not afforded by the Constitution and that has never been attempted in American history, even by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Remarkably, President Obama today made both of those speeches simultaneously. Standing inside the National Archives in front of the actual original Constitution, President Obama delivered a blistering critique of the Bush administration, in which he called their actions and their legacy literally a mess.
Our government made a series of hasty decisions. Poorly planned, haphazard approach. Too often, we set those principles aside as luxuries that we could no longer afford. Our government made decisions based on fear rather than foresight. The decisions that were made over the last 8 years established an ad hoc legal approach for fighting terrorism that was neither effective nor sustainable.
An ad hoc legal approach for fighting terrorism that was neither effective nor sustainable. Ouch. Then, moments later, he announced his own ad hoc legal approach for fighting terrorism. President Obama today proposed something new, something called prolonged detention. Doesn't sound that bad, right? Prolonged detention. Did you ever see the movie Minority Report? It was based on a Philip K. Dick short story. It came out in 2002. It starred Tom Cruise, remember? He played a police officer in something called the Department of Pre-Crime. Pre-crime is where people are arrested and incarcerated to prevent crimes that they have not yet committed.
Mr. Morris, by mandate of the District of Columbia Pre-Crime Division, I'm placing you under arrest for future murder of Sarah Marks and Donald Gubinos. Take place today, April 22nd, at 0800 hours, 4 minutes.
No, I didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything, but you're gonna. Future murder. Creepy, right? Putting somebody in jail, not for what they've done, but for what you're very sure they're going to do?
There may be a number of people who cannot be prosecuted for past crimes. In some cases, because evidence may be tainted. But who nonetheless pose a threat to the security of the United States.
We're not prosecuting them for past crimes, but we need to keep them in prison because of our expectation of their future crimes.
Al-Qaeda terrorists and their affiliates are at war with the United States, and those that we capture, like other prisoners of war, must be prevented from attacking us again.
Prevented. We will incarcerate people preventively. Preventive incarceration. Indefinite detention without trial. That's what this is. That's what President Obama proposed today, if you strip away the euphemisms. One civil liberties advocate told the New York Times today, quote, "We've known this was on the horizon for many years, but we were able to hold it off with George Bush. The idea that we might find ourselves fighting with the Obama administration over these powers is really stunning." And it's stunning, particularly to hear President Obama claim the power to keep people in prison indefinitely with no charges against them, no conviction, no sentence, just imprisonment. It's particularly stunning to hear him make that claim in the middle of a speech that was all about the rule of law.
But we must do so with an abiding confidence in the rule of law. Our government was defending positions that undermine the rule of law to ensure that they are in line with the rule of law.
How can a president speak the kind of poetry that President Obama does about the rule of law and call for the power to indefinitely, preventively imprison people because they might commit crimes in the future? How can those two things coexist in the same man, even in the same speech? Well, that brings us to the self-consciously awkward, embarrassing part of this speech today. After condemning the Bush administration for what he called their ad hoc legal strategy for trying to make things seem legal that patently weren't, this is what President Obama proposed.
My administration has begun to reshape the standards that apply to ensure that they are in line with the rule of law. We must have clear, defensible, and lawful standards for those who fall into this category. We must have a thorough process of periodic review so that any prolonged detention is carefully evaluated and justified. But our goal is to construct a legitimate legal framework for the remaining Guantanamo detainees that cannot be transferred. Our goal is not to avoid a legitimate legal framework. In our constitutional system, prolonged detention should not be the decision of any one man. If and when we determine that the United States must hold individuals to keep them from carrying out an act of war, we will do so within a system that involves judicial and congressional oversight. And so going forward, my administration will work with Congress to develop an appropriate legal regime so that our efforts are consistent with our values and our Constitution.
You'll construct a legal regime to make indefinite detention legal. You will, what does he say? Develop an appropriate legal regime so you can construct a whole new system outside the courts, even outside the military commissions, so that you can indefinitely imprison people without charges, and you'll build that system from scratch. What's that somebody said about ad hoc legal strategies? Just for context here, in the United Kingdom, where there isn't even a Bill of Rights, there's been a major debate about whether people can be held in preventive detention. Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair wanted 3 months to be the outer limit for how long anyone could be held. There was a big political fight about it. Parliament ended up limiting that power to 28 days. 28 days is still the longest period of preventive detention that's allowed under law in any comparable democracy anywhere in the world. How long would President Obama's proposed preventive indefinite detention last? Well, he's not saying yet, but here's how he defines the threat that he says makes indefinite detention necessary.
Right now, in distant training camps and in crowded cities, there are people plotting to take American lives. That will be the case a year from now, 5 years from now, and in all probability, 10 years from now.
10 years from now. So you could get arrested today and locked up without a trial, without being convicted, without being sentenced for, say, 10 years until the threat of your future criminal behavior passes. Prolonged detention, he's calling it. This was a beautiful speech from President Obama today with patriotic, moving, even poetic language about the rule of law and the Constitution, and one of the most radical proposals for defying the Constitution that we have ever heard made to the American people.
Okay, there it is. There it is. Rachel Maddow, good for you. And you're sticking it to Obama and trying to keep him... Well, I don't know what you're going to be able to do. I have a feeling that the corporate media could even turn against this nightmare that's happening in the world right now, and I don't know if it would do any good. So I don't know. What am I doing this for? What else am I going to do? You know, I can't do nothing. That seems like a pretty crappy way to go through life. I can't put my head in the sand. It's already out, and I've spoken... You know, my big fat mouth got open, and I'm not going to close it. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And, you know, it's really unfortunate that the peace activists got their heads in the sand. And that's unfortunate. And I hope you think long and hard about what you're doing this for. And, you know, and ask yourself, how effective has the peace movement been historically? I don't think it's been effective at all. Hasn't slowed down any wars. A lot of people say, oh, well, it stopped the Vietnam War. Well, that was a small part of that. I think the soldiers killing their senior officers played just a bigger role in that. Anyways, the Vietnam War, that's a pretty ugly situation. Well, we're kind of back in it, aren't we? You know, with the States and Canada in the Middle East right now, you know, fighting over resources and control of the drug trade. Yeah. Okay, well, that is going to do it. It's not going to do it. I'm going to put on one more audio clip, and then that will do it. I want you to know that the next hour is still blank. We don't have a show going in there yet, so if you want to follow me up from 10 till 11, that spot is open for you. What? Oh, you okay, Mom? No? Is it something you want to share, or is it private? Oh, Mom wants to go. Too bad. Quiet. 10:30. I don't think Mom's letting you join my show. That's unfortunate. Where we are going to go with this now is, let's do the Richard Gage piece. He's the founder and lead spokesperson for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. This is a recent piece from, believe it or not, Fox News Television. This is out of Fresno, California. I don't have the exact date, but it is a recent piece. So listen to this, and you will be quite impressed with the news anchors that interviewed Richard, and very nice indeed. So I am going to say goodnight. This is Raymond with the Unbought and Unbossed show. And, we're going to do it again next week. Okay. Let me find the piece. That's it. There we are. Okay, friends. Have a good one out there.
He's an architect experienced in steel structures. Now Richard Gage is touring the country with a controversial message about September 11th.
Richard Gage is here to show us why he's calling for a more thorough investigation into the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. It's great to be here.
Well, first of all, give us a little bit more about your background.
Well, I'm an architect of 20 years, mm-hmm. member of the American Institute of Architects, and have been studying steel frame fireproof buildings for about that long.
We ask that for clarification because as we get into this, we want people to make sure that you're not just somebody with a wacky idea.
Right.
Okay? You come with some science to you. What is the official reason for the collapse of the World Trade Center Tower?
Well, we're told that the planes hit the buildings and there was an explosion and a fire. And about an hour and a half later, in the case of the North Tower, the buildings collapsed due to structural weakening due to the fires. The problem is that we don't have large gradual deformations associated with collapses, and fires in high-rises have never brought down a steel frame high-rise building at all, ever. And what we have, unfortunately, is the evidence in the Twin Towers and the third skyscraper to collapse that day, which most people don't know anything about it. We have the evidence of the 10 key features of controlled demolition. In the case of Building 7, it collapses straight down into its own footprint at free fall speed in the first 100 feet. It's dropping, as you can see, symmetrically, smoothly, at free fall speed in the first 100 feet, 2.5 seconds. This is uncanny. There's 40,000 tons of structural steel designed to resist this collapse.
Is it, what, a 47-story building?
Yeah. This is called Building 7, right? A football field away from the Twin Towers. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what we're showing is left what happened. In fact, right is a controlled where you are using, or the people who made this happen, used demolition.
Indeed, and this is a direct comparison. And you can see that, indeed, almost free-fall acceleration through 40,000 tons of structural steel. That is uncanny. So we have 700 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation as a result of this evidence and the evidence in the World Trade Center that is very explosive. Almost every architect and engineer we show this information to agrees with us that these are controlled demolitions. If we can get them to look at the information, because obviously the implications of a controlled demolition are dark for our country,
yeah.
Because that means somebody besides Al-Qaeda was involved, because these have to be easily three of the most highly secure buildings outside the Pentagon.
Now, if that was a controlled demolition, would there not be any evidence at the ground level of explosives within the building
debris.
Itself, the debris that's left?
Indeed. And what we find down there is pools of molten iron.
What does that mean?
Several tons. Exactly. What is that doing there? The first responders see it. The structural engineers see it. It's documented by FEMA, the melting of steel. Normal office fires is what's supposed to have brought these buildings down, along with jet plane impacts. The jet fuel and office fires don't produce molten iron or molten steel. It doesn't begin to melt until 3,000 degrees. But what we have is the fires only produce maybe 1400-1600 degrees. So what produced all that molten iron? Well, it has in it the chemical evidence of a special incendiary, which is thermite, a high-tech incendiary used to cut through steel like
you
a hot knife through
that?
Butter. Indeed. In all of the dust throughout lower Manhattan, we have a 4 to 6 inch thick layer of this dust, and throughout it we have evidence of tiny spheres, billions of them, several tons, of previously molten iron. Well, how does that happen? If you have molten iron, the byproduct of thermite is molten iron, and it's dispersed throughout all of this dust.
Now, you are allowed to go in and get samples and examine it?
Oh, there's plenty of dust. A lot of people have this dust, and four of these samples have been sent to physicist Stephen Jones, formerly of Brigham Young University. And they find in it not only these spheres, which others have found too, USGS, R.J. Lee, doing toxicological studies. These spheres have iron, aluminum, fluorine, manganese, very unusual elements associated only with thermite. And there's small chips of unignited thermite as well. This is very high-tech thermite, nanothermite. It's not found in a cave in Afghanistan. It's produced in very sophisticated Defense Department contracting laboratories.
Okay, well, we have an enemy here. That the finger has been pointed to, that this was the work of Al-Qaeda. This was the work of Osama bin Laden, at least to get the planes all going into the buildings and into the field in Pennsylvania and into the Pentagon. Is there no way that they then could still be the enemy that placed those in the buildings first, and then did the incendiary device via a plane second?
Right. Well, what you have to ask is, who had access to the buildings? Did Al-Qaeda have access to these highly secure buildings? Probably not. Did they have access to sophisticated nanothermite, where the particles are 1,000 times smaller than a human hair? Probably not. Somebody else has to be investigated. And that's why we have 700 architects and engineers demanding a real investigation. We don't have the whole theory as to how this happened, who did it, why. We just lay out the facts like we did last night in the Veterans Memorial Auditorium, and we demand a real investigation, and they'll find out who, why, how, et cetera.
Okay. Now, let me ask you, I'm person X. I want to place something in one of those buildings. Where would I carry it? How big would it be? Is it that visible that I would be spotted by security? Or could I place it in one of my tooth fillings?
Yeah. We're talking about several tons of nanothermite and ordinary thermite. One would have to have access through security. So the security company involved for the World Trade Center should be thoroughly investigated. And it turns out to be Securicom, Stratasec. Somebody should look and see who's on the board of those companies. Some very interesting individuals turn out to be. In addition, one would have to have the cover of, say, an elevator modernization, which was, in fact, going on 9 months prior to 9/11, so that there were workers throughout the World Trade Center that had access to the hoistway, which is immediately adjacent to the core columns and beams in the building.
You're not trying to freak out the country, but you can't help but feel a little freaked out by this.
Yeah, you're getting it.
Yeah. And, of course, this is something we want to talk with you about a whole lot more, and we're out of time. But we do have a great deal of information on our website, knph.com. Thank you very much for your time today.
You're very so welcome.
Thank you for
opening up a lot to think about. We'll be right back.